Hello and welcome to this Danske Advantage podcast. It's our first of 2021, the first since Brexit, when the UK left the EU Single Market and Customs Union, except for Northern Ireland, which now operates under the Northern Ireland Protocol. So does that leave us here in Northern Ireland in the best of both worlds or in some kind of limbo? Does your company or do you bring goods in from GB or export them from here to GB? Are you struggling with the paperwork, red tape, groupage? That could be the word of the month, couldn't it? We've all been watching, reading and hearing and perhaps experiencing the teething troubles, as the government would have it, since January the 1st. So what can you do about it? Well, today we're going to find out how the Trader Support Service can support you, how they're helping businesses and traders of all sizes to navigate the changes in the way that goods have been moving or not since January the 1st. Now, clearly, I don't have the answers here, but thankfully my guests today do, and they're top-notch. Shankar Singham is CEO of Compotair. He's a senior member of Trader Support Service and a world-leading international trade lawyer. Frank Dunsmuir is Fujitsu Industry Lead for Customs and International Trade and a senior member of TSS as well. Guys, I'm totally delighted to have both of you with us today. And Frank, I know you were also involved with the Alternative Arrangements Committee and through that garnered a pretty in-depth knowledge of the complex implications of how trade would be affected here in Northern Ireland through Brexit. So from your perspective, how's it going so far?
Thank you, Wendy. It's been an extraordinary few months as we prepared towards the end of transition on the 1st of January. So that preparation time was quite intense for everybody, where traders and the actual transport organisations, the hauliers, have looked at what the changes and the implications of the changes will be and the introduction of new customs administration. And of course, we've been busy building the transport trader support service as a platform to serve those needs. We've all been dealing with the implications of COVID during that period as well, which has taken resource and finance away from organisations and their preparation. But we moved into January the 1st and the Trader Support Service did launch on time towards the latter part of December, around about the 24th of December. And we managed to get lots of seminars in due to the wonders of modern technology and Zoom. With a broad range of organisations who are affected by the changes. So we did an awful lot of preparations with organisations on how to use the service, and it launched successfully, and it's helping organisations with their customs needs already. So we've actually moved quite a lot of transactions already.
Well, Shankar, you've been involved for many years in complicated international trade agreements. Where does this one rank in your opinion?
Well, certainly it is complex. I mean, the negotiations between the UK and the EU were unlike many normal trade agreement negotiations, because normally both parties, you know, they want to have a solution and they are broadly aligned in terms of what that solution is going to be. Usually it's the reduction of barriers between the two sides. Here you had very different visions between the UK and the EU. The EU didn't want this process at all. And so that coloured the negotiations. That made it a very odd set of communications. The complexity of the Northern Ireland Protocol, you know, it certainly is an extremely legally complex, ambiguous document. And the challenge, I think, so I'd say I make sort of two points on the protocol at sort of very high level. One is, what's trying to be accomplished here is essentially three things. There has to be no border on the island of Ireland, which the Northern Ireland Protocol delivers. There has to be unfettered access between Northern Ireland and GB. And there has to be as close to free flow as you can get between GB and Northern Ireland. And that seems like an almost impossible task. And it is almost impossible. But the TSS, the Trader Support Service, is really supposed to focus on delivering that in key ways, that third element of as free flow as possible between GB and NI. And that's, even though there are processes, They are administrative processes, and what TSS has to do is make those as light touch as is legally possible under the circumstances, because you've got three communities on the island of Ireland that all have to be reasonably satisfied. You know, you've got the nationalists in the south, you've got the nationalists in the north, and you've got the unionists in the north. They all have to be satisfied. If one of those communities feels like it hasn't been satisfied, then we're going to have problems. So that's the complexity of the protocol. And in terms of the sort of trade effects of the protocol on Northern Ireland's economy, you know, yes, there are disruptions. Of course, we're reading about the disruptions. There are difficulties of moving goods from GB to NI. There are all kinds of checks and controls that didn't exist before. But at the same time, Northern Ireland has been put by the protocol in a very unique situation, which is that it is able to deliver. If you're a manufacturer in Northern Ireland, for example, you have access into the EU, into Ireland and the EU 26 on completely free terms, and you have access into GB on largely free terms, the so-called unfettered access. And you also have access through the UK's trade negotiations with other countries as well. I know that there is no other place on earth that can deliver that level of access to multiple customs territories. So I think if we can get through this period and make sure that we get goods flowing from GB into Northern Ireland, then the future for Northern Ireland actually under the protocol is a lot brighter than, you know, people are currently, you know, are currently assuming.
So down to the business, I suppose, if I could put it like that, the Trader Support Service, what is it and what does it do? Do you want to take that first, Shankar?
Well, as I sort of said in my comments at the beginning, the Trader Support Service is designed primarily to deal with the flow of goods from GB into Northern Ireland. And what the Trader Support Service does, which is, I think, unique amongst sort of customs intermediaries, if you will, is it's very much a digital first service. The customs intermediary sector is usually a very personalized service. It involves documents and wet stamps and all sorts of things like this. And it's very much a trader calls up a customs intermediary and says, I want to move these goods from, you know, A to B. Can you do my customs forms for me? TSS is very unusual in that we've created a, as we say, digital first service. And I think if you actually look at the data, about 65% of our customers' declarations are actually being raised entirely digitally. In other words, people are going onto the screens and they are adding their information, and lo and behold, customer declarations are being generated without a lot of human intervention. So that is sort of being fulfilled. That, of course, makes it a lot quicker, and it makes it a lot more administratively less sort of burdensome. So TSS is designed to simplify the process of getting goods from GB to Northern Ireland by using simplified processes that we are able to use. So we have a range of authorizations and simplifications that we then give to all of our traders. So we now have over 30,000 registered traders on TSS. Some of them, most of them, are actually very small traders who wouldn't ordinarily be able to have any of those simplifications and authorizations. They're just not big enough and not well versed enough in international trade. But they can use ours. They can sort of free ride off our authorizations, so that you can use these simplified procedures to get products easily to flow from GB to NI. We don't at TSS directly support. So we'll do the customs declarations, but we don't directly support some of the other certifications that are necessary. So things like agricultural, so-called sanitary and phytosanitary certificates and so on. And we're reading a lot about this. A lot of trucks are stopped because of SPS checks. This is products of animal origin, food, that sort of thing. We will advise people on it, but we don't do that. Now, also unusually for an intermediary, we have a very, very big educational arm, which obviously we need, because we've got to educate traders about these new processes. So we have a 700 person contact center, actually more than 700 people now. And they are actually turning round inquiries very rapidly. So, you know, we're getting calls answered within a couple of minutes, inquiries dealt with, even complex inquiries dealt with in a day or so, as opposed to people being left. It's a very unusual contact center because it's not like the questions are not always going to be very simple. They're going to be quite complex questions. So we have a tiering of knowledge so that the right person can be put with the right, you know, trader inquiry. And we have the Northern Ireland Customs and Trade Academy, which is run by one of the TSS consortium partners, the Institute of Exports and International Trade. And Northern Ireland Customs and Trade Academy does a huge amount of training and teaching and webinars and so on. So in addition to Frank and myself, who do a lot of webinars, we've done over 100, I think, seminars and webinars for trade associations, and literally thousands of traders have audited that. We've got about 125,000 downloads of Northern Ireland Customs and Trade Academy material by traders just in the last couple of months. So as educational offerings go, I don't think that's probably quite unmatched in terms of frequency and volume of downloads by any educational institution in that period of time. So we've got those arms to TSS as well, and we'll continue to educate and do this, and we'll continue. The important thing about TSS also is that it's not a one-off thing. We're not just doing a one-off process. We're continually refining. We're listening to traders. Wendy, you mentioned groupage in the introduction. We are listening to traders who are groupage traders. We're trying to make our systems, you know, work more smoothly for them. And we're also trying to ensure that we're integrated on delivering a sort of end-to-end journey for those traders and dealing with all the sort of teething problems.
It's fascinating stuff, I must say. I mean, Frank, do traders, how does it work? Do traders need to buy into it? What do they need to do to make it work for them?
We looked at the TSS service from a trader perspective. So how can this be as easy as possible? And customs is not easy for traders. And if you, for those of you aware, the Northern Ireland economy has a significant proportion of smaller businesses and entrepreneurs. So they won't have access to in-house expertise and large teams to work with. So our focus was, how can we make the process as simple as possible? Which means, as Shankar mentioned, we looked at a digital service. So much like you would fill out forms online, and we're used to doing that using web portals, etc. So self-help and self-service in that regard. But in terms of if you want to use the TSS, you have to go through a simple registration process. So if you go to tradersupportservice.co.uk, you can log on to the system and register online. That will give you a registration into the service. You'll need something called an EORI number to do that. You don't have to have it at the time of registration, but in order to be functioning, you'll need an EORI number, which is a government-provided number that enables you to recognise you as a trader across different customs regions. And it's really as simple as that. Register your company details, and when you have your EORI number, put that on the system, and you're up and running then in terms of being able to use the system. As Shankar mentioned, we've kept it simple as possible. So we use what are called the customs rate simplified procedures in order to actually get the goods into Northern Ireland as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So that's the least amount of data that's needed to move stuff.
Shankar mentioned your educational arm, and I suppose one of the difficulties in all of this has been the late stage at which it became clear what actually was going to be happening. And I think there's also, I suppose, always a bit of a temptation when you see something like this coming down the road virtually stick the electricity bill in the hall drawer and try to forget about it and hope that it'll all be okay. I mean, what, Frank, do traders need to do to prepare themselves, to make themselves ready for this? And so that they can, to the best effect, use the service that the Trader Support Service is offering?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question, Wendy. The trader readiness has varied enormously. Some organisations have been working hard for a few months to get their organisations in place and their processes in place. Others have left it fairly late for one reason or another. So the main points are: make sure you have registered on the TSS, make sure you have an IORI number that enables you to actually use the system and get started on the process. Then if you're buying stuff or supplying stuff, you need to look at your supply chain. Who is supplying you, or who are you supplying? Have they registered on the TSS as well? Because customs is a two-ended process, a start and a finish. A supplier and a buyer are both involved in that process. And in order to help and use the TSS, both entities should be registered on the service. The third thing is the carriage. Who is carrying your goods? Somebody's going to move the goods for you. Typically, you don't move them yourself. So you'll usually have contracts with carriers. You'll need to look at what terms those carriers are using in order to carry those goods, and also to make sure that they are prepared in terms of the requirements they need to fulfill in order to be able to move those goods as well. So, for example, it's down to the carrier to make sure they have the entry safety and security declaration. And finally, you need to look at your products. And in terms of your products, you will either be selling or buying different products. And each product now has a commodity code. And you need to make sure you understand the commodity code associated with your product. And as you look that up on the HMRC guides and various portals, it will also tell you if your products are subject to any special controls or certificates. So, for example, if you're moving oils or fuels and products like that, they are excisable, so you need an excise certificate. If you're moving food products, you'll need a health certificate. If you're moving chemicals, you'll probably need a conformance license or approvals to move those goods, etc. So understand those criteria, and you should be in a good place to be starting.
I'll just add a couple of things to that. I think our biggest challenge at the beginning was getting traders to actually register with TSS. And what's interesting is that we're up to, as I said, about 30,000 registered traders now. And that itself was a significant challenge and achievement to get up to that level of traders. But if you look at what's happened since January the 1st, we've had continuing, and we didn't really anticipate this. We didn't think that, we thought the goal was to get up to a certain level of traders by the sort of go live date, and then we'd work with our trader community and that would be it. But what we have seen is a 20% increase in the number of people registering with TSS since January the 1st. So it's taken, you know, several months or a couple of months at least to get up to 25,000. And then suddenly there's this been explosion of people registering, which is, I think, a indication. It's the market telling us that our service actually works, because people are obviously jumping onto it. And if it wasn't working, you wouldn't see that. So that is good for us to know. And it is, I think, what's happened, to answer your question, Wendy, is people really didn't plan for this event on January the 1st. They had a lot of other considerations, and I fully acknowledge, you know, you've got COVID, you've got these are very different processes to what existed before, and it's very hard to get your head around them until they actually happen. And that's what we're sort of seeing. The difficulty for traders also is that a lot of things were happening as we ran up to the deal in December on Christmas Eve, that were happening very, very late in the day. I mean, normally the way a trade agreement works is that the parties agree a trade agreement, they agree an implementation period of, you know, usually a year or maybe longer than a year, and people have time to sort of get used to these new things. And the new things are generally an improvement on the old situation. Here, you've got a situation where the deal was done very late in the day. There was no implementation period. And the new arrangements are materially worse from a restrictiveness point of view for GB to NI. So all of that is different. And that, I think, has created a lot of challenges. But notwithstanding that, some of these late stage agreements are really important for traders to understand. And I think one of them that is probably the standout thing in my mind that traders need to understand is what's called the UK Trader Scheme. You know, unfortunately, all these schemes have very similar names, so it confuses people. But the UK Trader Scheme, as distinct from the Trader Support Service, is to deal with what's called not at risk movements from GB to NI. So one of the most important things in the negotiation is that Northern Ireland is in the UK customs territory. It isn't in the European customs territory, and it isn't a separate customs territory that's sort of another member state of the EU, which people sometimes think. It's in the UK customs territory, which means that if you know and if you can show that your goods are moving GB to NI and they aren't going anywhere else, they aren't going into Ireland, and you've got proof that, they aren't going into Ireland, then you don't have to worry. If you register under the UK Trader Scheme, you don't have to worry about the rules of origin issue, which you're seeing, you know, in the media now. People are worrying about rules of origin. Do they still have to pay a tariff even though there's a trade deal? You don't have to worry about any of that. You will not pay a tariff. You will have to do the customs piece, but you don't have to worry about a tariff. You don't have to worry about rules of origin. And, you know, the hope is that some of these facilitations and easements will increase over time, consistent with the fact that Northern Ireland is in the UK customs territory. So I think getting traders to understand something that was negotiated in the final days of December, and the importance of that to their businesses is challenging, but we need to do that. We need to get people to understand that. And I think traders need to also understand that things have changed. You know, this is not the same. If you want everything to be exactly as it was before December the 31st, then I'm afraid, you know, you're going to be disappointed, because they have changed. Now, our job at TSS is to minimize the effect of that change on traders, and that's what we're seeking to do. But I don't think, to the extent that you can reorient your systems to be, you know, focused on Northern Ireland on the one hand, and then the wider European operations, including Ireland, on the other, you're going to be in a better position to advance and you're going to be in a better position to deliver the benefits of the protocol. So the trick for a trader here is, how do I manage the disruptions? I've got the TSS available to me to help me manage the disruptions. But how do I also, from my perspective as a trader, how do I maximize the opportunities that the protocol actually gives? How do I get manufacturing into Northern Ireland if I'm the Northern Ireland, you know, investment bureau, or, you know, invest in Northern Ireland government department? How do I sell Northern Ireland's position as an access point for Ireland, EU26 and GB, for example? So that requires a change in approach. And that, I think, has been one of the biggest issues that we've sort of faced.
I suppose, Frank, one of the things that concerns people here is that we've all seen the fact that with Christmas and COVID, the numbers of trading movements are down, and even with that, there have been problems. But I suppose the concern is that Northern Ireland, being a fairly small market, are there going to be GB companies that just decide that this is all too much of a problem? They're just not going to bother. They're going to try and sell more to people who are closer to them, where you don't have to put anything on a ferry. You don't have to fill in all these daft forms. And, you know, you're still going to get paid the same amount for your product. Is that a real concern that you might have too?
I think it is. And it's a concern because it's an unknown at the moment. The impact of that is not so much to do with the actual transport that you mentioned there, because you know, the markets mean that you're going to have to transport goods anyway. It's more to do with how the administration has changed, the cost of any administration, and of course, are there any implications around duties and tariffs that may or may not be payable? Some of the facilitations that have been introduced recently have moved significantly towards easing that situation. And it's that kind of direction that I think government and the EU, through the Joint Commission, will look at some of these areas where there are challenges, you know, in terms of the markets are being pressured, or the trade routes are being squeezed, and look at what can be done, or if any easements can be put in place or facilitations. A good example of that is the fast parcel sector, where There was a lot of question about, would I need a declaration to buy a pair of trousers from John Lewis if I live in Northern Ireland? So some of the recent facilitations have been introduced to remove that process and that administration from that transaction. So I think we'll see a lot of that going on. And similar, we're all aware of the supermarket easements, where the supermarkets have got a period of time where they don't need as much customs administration whilst they get their processes and their automation in place. So I think it'll be a combination of that, Wendy, that will take some of the pressure out here, which will be, can we ease the situation at least for a period of time whilst organisations look at some automation and some changes to their processes, so that trade can continue and not be affected by the additional administration.
Let's pick out some of the elements that actually you've both mentioned already, but which are enormously important, I think, to people moving goods in both directions. Groupage, it's one of those words that we probably never bothered too much about previously. You saw it on the side of the occasional lorry, but that was about it. But it has turned out to be a real hot potato in all of this now. What's happening around groupage? How are companies going to be able to navigate those difficulties? And how can the Trader Support Service assist them in that whole process? I don't know which one of you wants to take this first, but I'll throw it out there and let one of you catch it.
We'll probably both have a go at that one. It's an interesting one. First of all, what is groupage? It's you can move. Very broad definition of it, and hopefully the whole ears that listen to this will forgive me for this definition. It's you can move a complete load. So you might move a complete load for John Lewis, just all John Lewis stuff on that truck. Or you might move loads in what's called groupage, where a container on the back of a truck will have lots of different customers' goods on there. And in order to fill a groupage lorry, typically you will either make a number of trips to collect those items from the customer and then deliver them at different sites. So you go from a range of depots in Great Britain across the channel and deliver them a range of depots and locations in Northern Ireland. Or you do a more consolidated method where you send all of the items into a depot, you collect the group of goods from the depot, and then you go across to another consolidation depot in Northern Ireland. But they're all various models, so lots of different types of groupage models. The big challenge is groupage is very much just in time. And given the open nature of our before January, without the need for customs administration, you could pretty much do groupage just in time by loading the vehicle with different goods from different suppliers and moving them without customs administration. So now we have to fit a process in that says, for each of those consignments, can I have some customs declarations as well? And the big question is, where do you fit those in into that process so that you don't delay the vehicle as it's doing the collections and deliveries? And in terms of what we're doing about that, and how maybe Shankar, you could come back on the how TSS is approaching that.
Yeah, I think it is a unique challenge, because there was basically a logistical the logistics of this were essentially, most people operated according to a sort of two island strategy. I mean, there's the island of Ireland and the island of Britain, and from a logistics standpoint, I don't mean politically, but from a logistics standpoint, people sort of treated them that way. And there was a very integrated logistics supply chain that involves significant amounts of what we call groupage. And the challenge is that the TSS, the system that we're putting in place, does simplify that very simple movement where a truck is moving from GB to Northern Ireland to take some products from GB and drop them off in Northern Ireland. Groupage creates all kinds of additional challenges, including challenges that are not customs challenges. In fact, most of the challenges for groupage are in the area of agricultural checks and SPS checks. So if you have lots of product being put on a truck at different points in Great Britain, starting with the east of the country and moving to the west of the country and ending up either in Cairn Ryan in Scotland or in Holyhead, on the west coast of Wales, then that creates problems when you enter the Northern Ireland or the Irish market. And so what we have to do is deal with two things, or what the governments collectively have to do is deal with two things, which is, one, how do you have a customs system for groupage that facilitates the flow of those goods and deals with the reality that people are not going to know what's on the truck until very late in the day. You aren't going to be able to plan for this with, you know, multiple hours in advance. And the second thing is, how do you generate the SPS certificates and so forth in a way that is sort of rational for those groupage operators? And how do you then ensure that the checks are not highly disruptive to the trucks that are flowing across? So we're dealing with all of those challenges at the moment. And I just wanted to come back on one point you'd made, Wendy, before, which is this issue of trade not people sort of withdrawing from the trade. I think the challenge here is to look at this in terms of there's demand in Northern Ireland. And I think the way to look at this is, you know, ordinary supply and demand. There is big demand in Northern Ireland, and typically a supplier is not going to turn his nose up at demand, provided the administration is not so complex that it makes that demand it lowers the value of that demand. So I think our job in TSS is to lower that administrative burden so that, you know, when there is demand, as there, you know, obviously is in Northern Ireland, those who can fill that demand and therefore make revenue and therefore make profits and do well will continue to do that. And I think that's what you will see in the long term. So I expect these volumes to increase.
Can I also add in, we will launch in February a groupage model for TSS, which will allow organisations to work in a different way to the TSS works at the moment. So it'll be by what we call by consignment. So they can actually build their groupage model, their groupage delivery in line with their current processes. So it'll be a much smoother operation for them, and they'll be able to build the actual final groupage manifest at the point of loading in a much, much more efficient way than they can today. So that should be coming out in February. And we're convinced that will be a real improvement for the groupage industry for them.
Well, that'll be a relief for many people, I'm sure. Let's look at another area where there are potential difficulties for traders: at-risk goods and the whole business of processing as well. I think that's caused a great deal of anxiety and complication. Shankar, would you like to talk a bit about that, and then we'll come to Frank on it?
Yes, absolutely. So what has always been evident from the beginning was that this not at risk category is incredibly important, because it avoids a lot of the complications that result from the protocol. And the protocol envisaged a not at risk category. And the question is who would be in it and how much trade would be covered by that. And we've seen lots of numbers on this, you know, ranging from 60% to even 98% of trade could be covered by this not at risk category. So the way the rules work is that as long as you've got a Northern Ireland facility, and as long as you are facing into retail, in other words, you're selling into the supermarket or you're selling into retail, and it could be wholesale to retail, then you are eligible for this. And the only thing you need to then show is that you've got sufficient control over your goods movements, that you know where they're going, basically, and that you can, if somebody audited this and said, well, can you show that your products are only going to Northern Ireland, to retail in Northern Ireland, and you could do that, then you ought to qualify for this category. There is a provision that says if you're a processor, you can't be not at risk. However, there are exemptions to those rules for commercial processing in the food sector, in the construction sector, in a range of other sectors. So if you are a commercial food processor, you will be able to satisfy the not at risk category, and you will be able to qualify as a not at risk trader, provided, again, you satisfy the other requirements, i.e. you're selling to retail and you have a Northern Ireland facility and all of those things. So it is, you should be able to qualify for those things. You should be therefore able to register on the UK trader scheme. you have a basically until the end of February to register provisionally. And once you register provisionally, you have a registration for 4 months. It's a deemed registration for 4 months. No one will, you know, you don't have to wait to be notified. You are a, you know, you have that registration. In 4 months' time, there will be a sort of proper evaluation process from HMRC. So what I would encourage anyone who could possibly be in this category needs to make that application right now, because obviously it's a lot easier to be provisionally registered now than to wait for 4 months to go through some evaluation process. And it will be a real evaluation process. It won't be a check the box exercise. You will have to show that you have sufficient control over your movements. So that's the crucial aspect of it. There is a slight complication to this, which is that if you are importing products from rest of the world into Northern Ireland, and the tariff between the UK tariff is more than 3% lower than the European tariff, you can never be at risk. But what I suspect will happen is that creates a different situation for GB and Northern Ireland. So if you're importing into GB and subject to those rules I mentioned before applying, you can then qualify as a not at risk trader no matter what the UK tariff rate is. So what you probably will see is a lot of people doing that. If the UK tariff rate is substantially below the European tariff rate in many areas, and it will continue to get lower because UK is negotiating trade agreements with other countries. So you can probably see quite a lot of shifting of goods going into GB and then going into Northern Ireland under the UK trader scheme, and taking advantage of only paying that tariff and not having to worry about rules of origin and so forth getting into Northern Ireland. But the flip side of that is you'll also see a lot of manufacturing moving to Northern Ireland, because that's the way you can access the European market, and that's the way you can also access GB. So, you know, the two things working together ought to mean an increase in investment both in GB and in Northern Ireland. So that's the way it's supposed to work. And I think the trader community should certainly be very aware of the not at risk provisions in the UK trader scheme. And as Frank said earlier on, you know, the hope is that you can increase those levels of easements and facilitations as you advance and as time goes on. Obviously, that has to be agreed in the joint committee with the European Union. And but I see no reason why, as time goes on, as people become vested into the success of these arrangements, which is different from the previous negotiating period up to the end of December, when I think the EU and the UK were quite confrontational in their approaches to each other. I think that will change now. And as people are vested into making arrangements work, this is the obvious way to make them work.
It's a lot for traders to take in, Frank, isn't it? I mean, I know that not all of this applies to every single person, but you know, there must have been a point where people thought, well, you know, it'll all settle down, it'll be okay. But actually, is that going to be the case, or is it only going to be the case if companies actually do something about it?
Yes, it's a question of organisations are going through the learning curve at the moment. No doubt about that. But we've already had feedback from quite a range of organisations that said, you know, once we've done the first few, we're getting into the rhythm of this, and it's not as complex in some areas as we thought. So it is a question of learning new tricks. It is updating your processes and procedures. And we've seen some great examples of that where organisations are putting commodity codes on their carrier bills, for example, weigh bills. So information is provided on an existing form to the parties that need that information. So step by step, organisations are already getting their processes geared up and I'll call it a sausage machine like process, where they're getting into repeatable processes. And I think that's the learning curve people will have to get over. It's not just finding out what to do, but also making sure their processes do fit into the requirements as well. We're seeing plenty of evidence of that.
So friction really is the new normal, but actually sometimes friction is what makes things work better. I mean, are you hopeful that once these, I hesitate to call them teething troubles, but once these wrinkles are ironed out, that actually it will work well, and that new arrangements might be able to be made, which will tweak the remaining difficulties.
Yeah, I think the key to this is, and what I think the Northern Ireland community needs to continue to press for, and they have obviously been pressing for this up to this time, but they need to continue to press for, you know, further and better easements. And some of these easements are very technical in nature. I mean, a little technical fix here can actually have a huge impact on the ability to move, to flow goods easily from GB to NI. So we're not talking about massive changes. We're not talking about, you know, huge exemptions from everything. But little technical fixes will, which I think are achievable from the EU, will make it progressively smoother and smoother. And I think one of the things that will happen here, one thing that is certainly happening already, is that Northern Ireland importers and Northern Ireland traders are becoming more aware and more au fait with international trade processes. And that is only a good thing for them, because as they expand their reach and as they, you know, every small business, you know, there is no small business that I've ever come across that wants to remain a small business. They all want to grow. And the way you grow in the modern world is through international trade. And there are great opportunities for Northern Ireland businesses, you know, all over, not just in Europe and GB, but all over the world. And increasingly in the sort of highly connected, you know, internet, you know, world we're living in right now, you know, it's relatively easy for a small business in Northern Ireland to reach, you know, literally anywhere in the world. But to do that, you have to be able to deal with international trade processes. And the better they're able to deal with those processes, the better they will be able to reach global markets and the better they will be able to grow. So I think that is something that will certainly occur as a result of this.
And Frank, just as we kind of wind up this whole fascinating discussion, actually, for traders who are watching this, who maybe feel that they're not as far down the road as they would like to be, or who haven't yet got in touch with the Trader Support Service, or who maybe haven't done any of the things that we've been talking about, what are the things, what would you say to them would be the sort of timeline of what they need to do now, given that there are some important dates like February one that Shankar mentioned, and also April being another one of them? What would be their checklist for now?
The checklist, the best place to go to is our user guides on our website. So when you look on tradersupportservice.co.uk, you'll see there is a link to a user guide section, and it starts with what you need to do to be ready, how do you register, and it goes through each step by step. So if you access that site, it will give you the step-by-step guides. And I think in terms of the upcoming deadlines, if you're already moving goods, the next stage of the process is there will be supplementary declarations will be required. So that's a level of complexity above what's happening at the moment, where you will need to be saying in more detail the nature of the goods that you've been moving, and that will include commodity code details and prices and product details, etc. So there's some preparation to be done by organisations to make sure they're ready for that phase, which kicks in during February. But my best advice will be to go to the portal and look at the readiness guides that are on there. They're all written in short sections so that it doesn't take ages of your time. We know your time is precious, so they're typically 4 or 5 pages at maximum, and they contain the key data points in there.
And the message here, Shankar, would seem to be, you know, there. Yes, it is complicated, but there is lots of help there. And you just need to go and try to access that and make the absolute best of it.
And bear in mind that a lot of obviously the TSS is free at the point of use. So, you know, there's no cost to raising the customs declarations piece of this. And there's also no cost to the educational material and accessing the educational material. And ordinarily, if you were in a normal world and you were to call up your customs intermediary and ask for advice, this would cost a lot of money. Call up a lawyer or an accountant or whatever to get this kind of information would be very expensive. So, you know, that all of that information is available to traders and it's free. And what if I were a trader in Northern Ireland, I would be taking full advantage of this to really gear up my system, not just for handling GB to Northern Ireland trade, but in a wider world to get myself really geared up for the world of international trade that is going to be my future. And you know, certainly there are elements of the protocol that enable Northern Ireland to become a bit of an export platform. And what happens when you look at export platforms that are developed around the world is that you get all the ancillary benefits of you get the traders who are ready to trade, you get the supporting industry, the customs industry, the trade industry, the law firms, you know, suddenly start offering practice areas that they didn't offer before. You get universities that are offering degrees that they didn't offer before. You know, we're starting to see all of that happening in Northern Ireland. And yes, there are difficulties. Yes, there are complications. Yes, there are processes and things are changing. But let's not lose sight of the fact that actually there are some opportunities here as well in terms of what the protocol does to Northern Ireland as an export platform. And it's really important that traders take full advantage of all of that as well.
Look, it's been absolutely fascinating hearing from both of you. Thank you so much for your extremely valuable time. And it's a great relief that you popped in right at the end there, the fact that the trader support scheme is free. I'm sure there are a lot of people thinking, yes, whoopee, I'm going to get onto it right now. As you've both said, please, if you are looking for assistance, do get in touch with TSS, tradersupportservice.co.uk. For further information, there's also the Northern Ireland Business Info website. You can go to InvestNI, Intertrade Ireland too. Big thanks to Shankar and to Frank. This has been an episode of the Danske Advantage podcast series, and I very much look forward to your joining me the next time. Thanks for your company today.